Someone listening may say, well, my goodness, prison ministry in general has got to be difficult, just in general.
Yeah.
Because you're dealing with so many different individuals. And again, we talked about perception. And particularly because of all the debates and policy about whether it's death row or just how we treat and manage our correctional facilities in general. How are you able to balance all of that and then what you're tasked to do and what you feel like you've been called to do inside of a correctional facility with some people who may not belong there or with people who definitely belong there and who, as Dennis put it, have done some bad things, some really bad things?
It has become part of my spiritual practice. You know, my title at the cathedral is Canon for Spirituality and Mission, and to me those two are totally intertwined. And I go out there on Monday night for the Episcopal service, and I'm in charge, I'm on duty, and yet I leave feeling like I've really worshiped and really been ministered to. So there's something about it that feeds me. And I said before, these women really are my teachers.
What have you learned? You did mention that before. What have you learned?
This is gets at what's hard about it, too. What's hard about it, and you know, in a case with Kelly, for example, this is a woman who has been involved in a murder. And, you know, holding on to that and thinking about the parents of her victim and thinking about her victim and also loving her. And, I mean, it is a hard thing to balance sometimes. And so I have to keep reminding myself, I know one side of this story, and I know there's more to the story. Personally, I need that because I don't ever want to become really complacent in the way that I see things. I don't ever want to really feel like I've got God in a box. You know, I've got my theology in a box. And so I need to be an environment that keeps pushing me and raising questions for me. And that's what this environment does. It raises a lot of questions. One thing that's hard about it is what we were talking about before. You can't fix. Sometimes you can't even help. You know, it can be a very helpless feeling. You walk into the prison and you also are vulnerable, not to the women, but just to the whole system.
You mentioned Doug Gissendanner's parents. They have issued a long statement about this where it just says they want to remember him.
Right.
They're not planning to be at the execution, for instance. I don't know if you've had any contact with them or whether that's even appropriate, but if you could speak to them, what would you say?
I don't understand. I can't say I understand how much they're hurting, but I respect it. I have major respect for it. And I'm mad at Kelly too. I mean, we all are.
because that's part of, I think, what a lot of people particularly support the death penalty, I'd say, is do people who work with inmates ever feel angry at them for what they've done?
Yes. And that's one of the things that's hard about being in that environment is remembering, you know, we don't live in a black and white world. We don't have those absolutes that we'd like to have where you can say, this person's good and this person's bad. This is where guilt is and this is where innocence is. And it's hard to be in the middle of that sometimes, to be able to say, I love this person, but I know she's done something really awful. But for the Gissendanners, I mean, it's just, again, executing her is not going to bring him back. In fact, it makes this, I they probably have no intention of ever reconciling with her, and understandably so. But if they ever did just need to say their piece or something like that, she's not going to be there for that. And whereas if she stays in prison, she's in prison. She's not coming out. And then there are her children. And talk about being in the middle. Her children are victims of the crime also.
Her daughter was 6, I believe.
I don't know the exact age, but they were all young. They are victims of this crime. And they have also suffered. And he's their dad also. He was a great father, from what I understand. And I just don't think he'd want his kids to suffer any more than they already have. I feel silly even saying anything because their grief is so much deeper than anything I can even speak to.
Before we wrap up, Reverend, do you do any research or background information on any of the inmates that you work with to get a better feel for what they have gone through or how they got there to the correctional facility? And does that help you at all? And are you allowed to do that, I guess?
You can't. I mean, a lot of it's public. I don't until I get to know them. And that's what I tell. I work with other student teachers who come in and I tell them the same thing.
Really?
Yes.
Because you don't want them to go in with some preconceived judgment or...
I don't know why. I just think you have to get to know people first and get to know them where they are first. And then within the context of that relationship, you can look back and you can get into those muddy waters. But Barbara Brown Taylor came and spoke at one of our other graduations.
She's a pastor from North Georgia, and former President Carter thinks she's one of the best preachers in the world.
Yeah, I do too. But she's a very thoughtful writer. And she, in her address to the students, it was called... She wrote The Danger of a Single Story, and it was based on something she'd read by somebody else. I can't remember. But I remember her talking about, to the women in there, you're not defined by that single story. You are not that moment in your past. And that's how I feel about the women in the prison. And that's why I think sometimes get to know the person now, get a sense of the whole person. And then if you feel like you need to, you can look at the crime. A lot of times they'll end up telling us about it once we have a relationship with them. So. Not in detail.
Sure.
These women are getting out, most of them. Kelly Gissendanner isn't. But most of the women that you might run into are eventually going to get out of prison and move into some sort of life afterward. Is that on your mind when you are working with those who are going to get out? Because that's such a critical question. How are they going to make the adjustment with some sort of spiritual grounding to a life that's going to challenge them every minute once they get out?
Yes, that is on my mind in some ways, but I want to be clear. I don't know how many of the women, I work with a lot of women who have life without parole, or several, I won't say a lot, and I work with a lot of women who have life. So I don't get too into the distinctions of who is getting out soon and who's not. And life still has value, even if you're still in the prison. And you can still do good work. You can do ministry. You can do a lot within prison. So that's, you can be a leader in the prison, a positive leader. When it comes to the women leaving, yeah, it's extraordinarily difficult. It's hard to find a job. It's hard to get people to give you a chance with a job or housing. You know, somebody who's been in prison for 22 years and they're released, they've never seen a cell phone. They don't really know how to use a computer. It's a major life adjustment. And the Department of Corrections and the governor's office are working on making that transition easier. But I think we have an obligation, for me as a faith community, to be there in that liminal moment for those people too.
Well, now, on the other end of that, counseling someone who's coming in for the first time with the realization they're going to be here for the remainder of their life as well.
Yeah.
That's got to be challenging.
It is. And I don't know that I counsel, you know, in the sense of a traditional sense. But again, you meet people where they are. You don't have to come in with the answer. And I think something that intimidates a lot of people from doing this kind of ministry is thinking, oh, I wouldn't know what to say. You don't have to know what to say. You know, you learn a lot from the people you're with.
As a theology teacher and as a priest, you're wrestling with concepts of justice and mercy, sometimes contradictory forces, which are not just legal things. These are biblical things.
Right.
These are something in the Judeo-Christian tradition, which are emphasized a lot. How has this experience helped you learn about that sometimes tension in the spiritual world between justice and mercy?
I'm still learning about it, is the first answer. But I'm understanding God's justice as very different from our human conceptions of justice, that justice is not always tit for tat. It's not always even about fairness.
That's interesting. Why?
Part of it is that that's that whole thing of we can make it right. You know, that justice implies we can fix things. We can make things even. You know, if I give you a little more and you a little less, then we're all good. And that, to me, is not how justice works. I mean, God's justice is very much tied up with God's mercy. You think about the story of David and Nathan. and David has committed this egregious sin. He's committed adultery. He's had Uriah killed. And Nathan comes up to him and, you know, calls him out on it and says, you are the man. And that's the turning point for David. I mean, that moment of judgment, of justice, actually gives David a second chance. I mean, I see that as tied up in God's mercy. That is God stopping him in his self-destructive tracks and in the, you know, his destructive tracks.
You mentioned people of all different beliefs and faith within the system, but for a non-believer,
mm-hmm.
Who comes to you and says, or you know, who has a hard time mm-hmm. understanding any connection to whether it be religion
mm-hmm.
or spiritual, whatever, what have you. So then what do you, how do you handle that?
Really the same way. I use different language, but I...
Like what?
Well, for example, there's a woman who I think the world of, and she comes to the Episcopal service. She's one of the most faithful attendees at the Episcopal service. She's been through the theology program. She has just grabbed hold of it. And in fact, she did a presentation in one of our classes about suffering and was really raising the question, I have trouble believing in God because of all this suffering. Where was God when? Where is God now? I mean, questions that I think all of us have. And her raising those questions gave all of us the opportunity to talk. And we actually right now have a class going on right now called, I think it's Perspectives on Suffering and the Theological Perspectives on Suffering and the Role of Ritual. So there's room for that. And, you know, having a diverse group challenges some of the assumptions that we make. So this woman comes to the Episcopal service every week. And when I go around, she doesn't receive communion. But everybody has the option if they don't receive communion of having a blessing, and I bless her. But I don't bless her always in the name of God, the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. You know, I might say in the name of God. Or, you know, it's, and it's not that I'm denying being a Christian or denying Jesus. It's just, I think God's at work in her the same way God is at work in everyone else in there.
So, is she a non-believer?
She's an atheist. We have a few women who are atheists, and my experience is a lot of them have been hurt by the church. And so I don't want to say, you know, I know better than they do what they believe. But what's clear to me is there, it's a certain image of God that they don't believe in.
Reverend, will you get to speak to Kelly before the scheduled execution, and or are you planning to attend?
I will, as long as I don't get in trouble for anything today. But yes, I should be able to speak with her before the execution. I plan to be on the premises. I don't think I'm able to witness. But yes, I'll be there with her. She's got a circle of people who have really been supporting her through this.
Reverend Kathy Zappa is an Episcopal priest who works with some of Georgia's female inmates and has worked with Kelly Gissendanner. She's also the canon for spirituality and mission at the Cathedral of St. Philip here in Atlanta. Reverend Zappa, thanks so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for listening, and thank you for caring.
Thank you, Reverend.